Howdy folks, welcome to the In The Blues Tone podcast. My name's Shane. This is a podcast about guitars, about gear, about concepts, and anything else relating to my YouTube channel about the same topic. So if you're into guitars, you'll definitely dig this podcast. It's not only now available on iTunes, as it always is. I'm going to put the full podcast up on YouTube as well. So given that I live in Australia and our internet connections totally suck, it'll probably take 4 or 5 days to upload. No, it won't be that bad, but it will take close to 24 hours. This particular podcast is still sponsored by nobody. So I'm going to plug something that I did this week and I hope you like it. I've just put together some t-shirts. I've had so many requests over the years to do this. So definitely check them out. If you're a fan of Guitar Search Saturday videos, you're definitely going to love my tees. They're at teesprings.com. You can type in the blues, or you can check out the links in the description of this video if you're watching on YouTube. And I'll also post the links at inthebluespodcast.com. Rather than having a sponsor, I thought I'd plug something for myself for a change. About 24 hours ago, I just received an instant message via Facebook from my friend Landon. He has the Lando 27 Music YouTube channel in Canada. And he sent me a link to something Gibson is doing right now, which is totally Fender-esque. Let's just put it that way. I'm not going to say they've copied Fender, but it reminds me of a couple of guitars that came out about a year ago, where they take one color, sort of paint over that, and then sand back the external color, showing the color that was underneath it. This particular run of guitars is literally called the Painted Over Series Les Pauls from Gibson, so definitely check these out. They say it's a historic mashup of colors and character. You know what? They don't actually look too bad. I'm not a huge fan of relic guitars, if you know my channel and you know my podcast, but I gotta say, these don't look too bad at all. But, it always comes with a but, the price is crazy. In the US, $5,999. So you're paying $6,000 essentially for a Les Paul that has been painted over. If you already have a Les Paul, paint it yourself. Give that a shot. Anyway, they do actually look pretty cool. So here's the blurb for the new guitars. It says the 2017 Les Paul Standard Painted Over Series blends the minute details, iconic look, and feel of Gibson's most inspiring solid body guitar with a refreshingly defiant, roughed up, weathered aesthetic that's been handcrafted to make each guitar its own one-of-a-kind work of art. That's a huge sentence, but that's exactly what they look like. So they come in a whole bunch of different colors as well, and the finished is aged nitrocellulose as well. In terms of the other colors, we have black over gold, we have black over cherry sunburst, we have classic white over cherry sunburst, we have gold over cherry sunburst, and we have Kerry green over dark burst. Kerry green, I've never heard of that color before, and it says Kerry green, but it comes up to my eye looking as if it's blue. Maybe I am going colorblind, but to me that looks like baby blue, pretty much. I've just brightened the screen on my laptop and I still see that as baby blue. So yeah, that's what's coming out right now. So the neck is a mahogany piece of wood. It's a glued neck as well. The neck profile is a medium chunky 9-inch depth at the nut and a 1-inch at the 12th fret. So the scale length is 24.75 or 62.865 centimeters. Fingerboard material, solid rosewood. So they're still rosewood, so that's interesting. I wonder if they're going to still have problems with sights or whatever, getting these out of the country, or getting them out of the US, I should say. I'm surprised that they didn't maybe change that up with this series of guitars. That's interesting. So the nut material is nylon. The frets, historic medium jumbo. Medium jumbo is pretty good. They're probably my favorite on Gibson style guitars, or Gibson guitars. I play Tokais, but each their own. I've had a number of Gibsons, and the frets are always pretty good. The inlays are cellulose trapezoid, and the truss rod is a 50 style no tubing. I never heard of no tubing before, but that sounds pretty cool. So, as you can see from the pictures on screen, they look pretty wild. The only thing is, will most people go out there and spend $6,000 US on a guitar that looks like it's been to hell and back? I don't think your average musician will, but you know, there's doctors and lawyers out there who have way too much money to burn. And if they're a big fan of this type of look, odds are they'll go out and spend the extra bucks and get it. It is a limited run. It is very Fender-esque. I've seen so many Strats over the last few years that have this exact concept. And it seems to be the same type of spots that they do the sort of relicking on as well. It's always where your arm would sit on top of the guitar and sort of underneath as well near the horn. So on the Strats that were from Fender, they had a very similar type of thing. I guess that's where you would wear a guitar out if you actually ever wore a guitar out these days from overplaying it. But yeah, they do look pretty nice. The only one that I don't really like too much is the white one. Other than that, just for personal taste, the rest of them look pretty wild. The baby blue one, or the green, or whatever it's called, I'm not 100% certain about that one either, but it's not too bad. So in terms of the neck pickup, we got a custom Bucker Alnico 3, and the bridge pickup is a custom Bucker Alnico 3 as well. And we have two 500K CTS volume pots and two 500K CTS tone pots, which is pretty common for any Les Paul. 500K is about what you want for any humbucker to allow the tops through. It also comes in a funky case, and it's an aged hard shell brown/pink case. Inside, open it up, it says pink. Maybe it's my monitor, but it looks purple on my screen. But I'll post the pictures on screen for this as well. So reading the comments on the Gibson site is always a laugh as well. Guy called Monty says, I wonder what stupid person at Gibson thought this was a good idea. And the global elitist under that says, with a reply, maybe someone who saw it sold some units to the Fender custom shop. So I hadn't even read the comments until right now. That's pretty funny. Another interesting comment from Eduardo says, who would pay $2,000 more than normal just to get these weird finishes? So that's the thing. You've got to really love the look. You've got to be into the relic thing. And you've got to really just want something like this, you know, for the artistic sake. If money is no option, maybe you're into relic guitars more than the average guy, but you're looking at a regular Les Paul versus a limited run painted over series one, and the price is $2,000 more. So get ready to break out the credit cards, folks, and yeah, let me know your thoughts on these particular guitars. Let me know, you know, seriously, what you think of the look of them. I don't mind some of them. I think they look great. Me personally, not being like swimming around in cash, I probably won't be buying one, and they won't make a lefty, as per always. That's always the way. But they don't actually look too bad on the most part. But I know that it's going to get a mixed response. Some people are going to love them, some people are not. So let me know your thoughts in the comments below about these particular guitars. I'm looking forward to seeing them in person. If I do, I'll try and get some really great photos of it or something and post it up on my Instagram. So the live YouTube summit that I hosted on the In The Blues channel recently with Lewis the Tone King, with Steve from Pixie Licks, with Philip McKnight and Nick in the States was a huge success. So thanks to everyone who tuned in for that. We had a constant 400 to 450 people watching the entire time. Many people stayed for the entire 2 hours, which was awesome. The idea was to work with other guys that reminded me either of myself or are just small, independent people working from their house that do a similar thing to what I do, who might have a similar temperament as well. All of us hadn't spoken together before, although I'd spoken to some guys and they've spoken to other guys that were in the group, but we've never all spoken to each other up until that point. Philip and I had never even sent emails back and forth until organizing that stream, and he was a lovely guy. His YouTube channel's great. Full of great information. The Tone King, Lewis, is such a nice guy, and Steve as well, Nick in the States, they're all really good dudes. The concept of that particular live stream was to bring people together. That kind of reminded me of myself doing things at my house, you know, without the sponsorship and all that kind of stuff of major companies. We just do what we do, and people seem to like it. And I feel like those guys have similar temperaments to me as well. So hopefully the people that like my channel will then in turn subscribe to their channels and enjoy their content as well. As I mentioned in the live stream, it kind of felt like a lot of us had our own little section on YouTube and our own little community. There's very few people that are subscribed to multiple channels, unless of course I used to do these videos where I'd post up a video saying, hey, check out these guys' channels. They're new, they're worth the support. You know, bringing people's attention to smaller channels is something I've always done. But it's a really cool thing to see, you know, big channels out there that I wasn't even aware of until recently. I had no idea. honestly who Philip McKnight was. I'd heard a lot about him, never seen his YouTube channel come up in the feed or anything like that up until about a month ago. And then I thought to myself, hey, this guy's got some really great stuff, some really great ideas. And just to let you know too, after that stream was over, the majority of us stayed on for another 3 hours and just compared notes, had a chat, and we made the most of the time. So I feel really sorry for the Americans who were on and it was extremely late there. But yeah, I had a gig and I had to go, but I heard they stayed chatting even after that amount of time too. So yeah, it is something we're definitely gonna do again. That's the point. The next live stream will be hosted by Lewis the Tone King. And I'm not 100% certain who he's got on, but I'm definitely gonna be on. And hopefully we can get Pixie Licks on there as well. And I also would love to include another smaller channel, maybe Agufish. I guess Kenneth Russell isn't really a small channel. He's got like 20 something thousand subscribers, but even Kenneth, or even, you know, another small channel as well, maybe Lando 27 Music, something like that. It's always good having the newbies, I'm going to say newbies in quotations, who are making great content. You know, it's good to promote, help promote them as well. I've had a lot of positive things come out of this, and I'm not talking just about, you know, YouTube statistics. Like, a lot of people who weren't aware of my channel are now aware of it. I see a lot of people that I know supporting the other YouTubers' live streams as well. When I go over to, say, the Tone King's live stream, we're having a laugh with a lot of the In the Blues community over there and vice versa. So yeah, it's been a really positive thing. There's lots of great guys out there doing very similar things to what I do, and I do very similar things to what they do as well. We just do things in our own way, and we've all got our own knowledge and niche as well, which is really cool. While we didn't take a lot of Q&A from the last live stream, this next one, I'm hoping we spend a bit more time answering some questions, because given that it was the first time we'd all spoken together, we kind of were just enjoying the fact that we had a chance to chat, and the time went like that. I looked up and we had like 30 minutes left at one point. I couldn't believe it. I only wanted to do it for 2 hours. We could have sat there talking for much longer on air, but I didn't know, you know, if behind the scenes any of them had to go do something else. So one more huge thanks and shout out to Philip McKnight, the Tone King, Pixie Licks, and Nick in the States for being a part of that. I really appreciate it. I hope we can do more of it coming up in the future, and I know we will. If the other guys don't want to host it for whatever reason, I'm more than happy to host them anytime. I'd love to do one a month, even if it involves bringing in other people as well as having a few core regulars. I think that would be a really good thing. The thing to keep in mind too is this is the only way I see smaller channels, say below 100,000 subscribers, succeeding, is to work together on the most part. You know, we don't have staff. We don't have people doing all our video editing. We don't have people doing all our lighting. We don't have people in our videos other than ourselves on the most part. We do everything. We set everything up. We, you know, do all the emails. We get all the gear. We do all the product shoots and all that kind of stuff, and no one else helps. I don't know if any of the other guys have staff, but I don't, and I'm pretty sure they don't either. So this is the best way for us, the independent guys, to move forward and keep, you know, the balance of power out there from the salesman, also through to just user experience reviews like what I've been trying to do lately and what all the other guys do as well. So don't forget, head over to the Tone King's channel for the next live stream. It'll be on the 30th of June, I'm pretty sure. And that'll be a whole lot of fun. I spoke to him before. I think his starts around 1 minute to midnight. But head over there. I'm sure he'll schedule up a video and you'll be able to see exact time, what that equates to in your part of the world. Please let me know who you'd like to see on a future live stream. And if you want to be a part of it as well and you have a YouTube channel, also comment below. I have a few people that I definitely want to get on, as I mentioned. But yeah, I'm always open to suggestions as well, as I'm sure the rest of the guys are also. So what are my final thoughts on the Boss Katana amplifier? I really, really like it. This actually blew me away way more than, say, the Roland Blues Cube, which I like. I think the Roland Blues Cube is a great amp. It's very, very similar to a PV Bandit, although it sounds different. They're very, very comparable amplifiers. This Boss Katana is kind of like the next evolution of a Fender Mustang in some ways. It's much better than the GTs, so don't get that confused. I would take a Boss Katana over a Mustang GT like that. There would be no two ways about it. I kind of feel like it has some advantages over the version 2 Mustang amps in some ways, but not in every way. Some of the things that I like about it is it has a lot of headroom. And if you don't know that term, what I'm trying to explain is, say you're on a clean channel, you put an overdrive pedal on, and then you crank up the volume on that pedal patch. On some modeling amps, and this isn't all of them, but on some of them, you don't get a whole lot of extra volume. It kind of maxes out really quickly. These get loud quick. It's like they just left a whole lot of clean headroom available for the effects, and that makes it feel really good to play. It feels great under the fingers. It feels and sounds great to your ear, and it feels really organic to play. I know that's kind of a weird sort of cork sniffer term kind of thing, organic, but it really feels like you're playing an amp with external effects. That's how cool it is. The only downside I experienced with this amp personally, which has been corrected, is the Boss Tone Studio. I couldn't get it to run on my Mac for whatever reason, and there was no software available for the PC at the time of doing that demo. Now that I've had a chance to use the Boss Katana software, I really like it. I like that it's very simple to use. You can just click which pedal you want from a drop-down menu and you're good to go. If you haven't seen my video on that, I'll post it up in the cards. You can check that out as well. The only thing I'm not a huge fan of is the order of things that you put on the actual external effects pedal. It would have been great to just not have reverb as an on-off option. You know, if you want reverb, you're generally going to leave it on. I would prefer to be able to have, say, two overdrive pedals, a modulation pedal, and a delay, or even just one overdrive. But having all of that set up in the actual order that makes kind of sense. It feels like it's a bit of a mismatch of how they've designed it. You know, you've got reverb on your far right, you've got your boost on your far left. So that's already kind of like the wrong way around. I would have done it so you'd be thinking about it if you had them all in an actual pedal board, which order of, you know, the effects would go in. That's the kind of order that I would love to see Boss do on a future upgrade of that switch. Have it in the conventional pedal order. All in all, the amp sounds great. If you have a Boss Katana, I know why you're raving about it. It's on my guest list right now. I am thinking about it, which is crazy. I don't need one, but I definitely want one. Would it replace any of my other amps? I don't know. I just think it's a really usable amp. If you're going to a jam, you can get your sound sorted out extremely easy, and it just feels and responds the way you'd hope as well, which is great. Like with most modeling amps, the one thing I did find was a couple of the distortions were a little fizzy sounding. It might have just been an EQ thing, but I found like that top end weirdness was there. Other than that though, the rest of the amp and what I used it with, I really enjoyed. It was a lot of fun to do that demo, especially after using the Mustang GT. A huge thanks again goes out to my friend Rob for allowing me to borrow his amp. Man, the Katana is really cool. Sadly, I have to give it back in like 3 days, but I've, as of today, shot the rest of the videos that I need to shoot, so there'll be one or two more coming up on the channel. All in all, I'm sticking to my rating of 8.5. I think that's a really high rating for a non-valve amp or tube amp. In terms of sound, functionality, all that kind of stuff, an 8.5 out of 10 is extremely good, so it really hit the nail on the head. In terms of the GT, I'd probably give that around a 4.5. That's just my opinion. One of the things I let go on the channel about 3 years ago were the mailbags. I think the last one I did was on the, July 9, 2014. That was the last time I did a Q&A mailbag. I might actually start doing that again. There's a couple of reasons. One, I love the live streams and I basically answer as many questions as I can within that hour or 90 minutes or however long it goes for. Sometimes they're only supposed to go for 30 minutes, they end up going for 90 minutes because the time flies. I really enjoy it. But there's times when a mailbag episode will be exactly what I need to express my points. I may kind of include this into the podcast that's in some capacity. I'm not 100% certain yet, but I'm definitely getting a lot of questions via Facebook and via Instagram and all this kind of stuff where people want to know a specific question. I think if I had a dedicated video that kind of covers some of these questions, I can then just point them to that link and they can watch what I have to say about it, because a lot of people trust my opinions and sort of judgment when it comes to gear and what works well with other types of gear and all that kind of stuff. So the plan is to hopefully bring back the mailbag maybe towards the end of June, something like that. I already have enough unanswered questions from YouTube to last a lifetime. I try my best to get back to everybody, but some days I wake up and there's been like 800 comments posted across my videos, and there's just no way I can keep up with that. So I try to usually comment as soon as my videos go live. I'll reply to a lot of people, and then the next day as well, if I see a question that really needs to be answered, I'll also reply if I see something like that. But a lot of stuff just goes under the radar. I spend probably 12 hours a day editing videos, and in that time I sort of shut down the YouTube comments and all that kind of stuff. I don't look at it unless a video is going live. That's the only time I'll check comments, on the most part. Otherwise, it's just too time consuming. I'd rather get things done. And I think if I got a mailbag thing back, people can expect an answer, hopefully, on the future mailbag. So I'll start the first one off with any comments or questions we get on the podcast, and we'll take it from there. So the following month, it'll be questions. You can reach me at intheblues@outlook.com. Just type in mailbag or something like that in the subject. Or, you know, you can leave a comment at inthebluespodcast.com as well. There's a social plug in there. Either way, I'll check it out. And Facebook is always available as well. That's where I get the majority of my questions. I get thousands of questions on there, and I try my best to answer everybody. And there's usually a lot of follow-up questions as well. For me, it would be a whole lot easier just to do something like this, where I answer your questions in person rather than just typing a short sentence. I'm sure people go, man, why doesn't he spend more time replying? I literally have trouble keeping up with all the questions, so I really need someone on staff now to just reply to comments. But yeah, it's getting to that point. It's getting to that point where it's great. I really love the fact the channel's grown so much and that people trust my judgment so much with stuff as well. So yeah, it means a lot, and I always try my best to get back to everybody as well. If you do have any specific questions you want answered, you can look me up on Facebook, or just post a comment on YouTube or at intheblues.podcast.com. A couple of months ago, I posted a video on YouTube saying no more demos. What that essentially said in the video was, I only want to do one a week, and I still only want to do one a week, except they've piled up like crazy. So I have to get them out. I don't like stuff just sitting around. I kind of almost see gear demos, like traditional demos of me just showing you a pedal or whatever, as filler. They're not as exciting or as interesting as other content on my channel, and I know that, and my analytics show that as well. So a podcast episode will generally get way more hits for and comments and interaction than any gear demo that I'll do. When I do those critical and in-depth review videos, that's different. But in terms of just a traditional demo, they're not really worth that much of my time anymore. I'm pumping out a lot of time into them and not getting much out of them. And that's fine. I mean, people like to see new gear, and I still want to do that, but I just don't want to do it as often as I'm doing it right now. And come the end of June, that's going to be back to one a week. I just need to get what I've got done and move them out. You might be asking, what do you do with all of these pedals once you get them? So what I've started doing now on my Patreon account, which is something I've never really promoted ever, I'm pretty sure, at least on videos, other than a little cube that I post at the end of the videos. Everyone that's on there, even if they put a dollar into the show, gets first dibs on any of my gear at half price. If no one wants it, I then list it on my own website or eBay and flip it from there. There's no reason I would need 7 or 8 fuzz pedals. There's just no reason. And it just seems like if people are going to invest in my channel and they like what I do, they get first dibs on anything at a huge, huge discount on what you'd buy it for, wherever it came from, or even on my own shop. If I list it on my own store, it's going to be more expensive just as an ex-demo shop as selling it to someone who supports me on Patreon. I think that's only fair. The plan is, moving forward after June, I just want to stick to doing my regular shows that I have coming up 3 times a week. The help tutorial series, I have so many great video ideas for that. I shot 2 of them today, and I had so much more fun shooting those than I do just pedal demos. I'm lucky, you know, I'm not complaining. I love getting new pedals in, trying them out, and being blown away by some of them. And others, you know, they're okay, but they're not always my thing. I really see the demos as almost filler for when I don't have other content, or if I, you know, I have another commitment come up and I miss something that should be up on a certain day. Once the Guitar Search Saturday videos start getting released again, I'm almost going to be really consumed with those. Those are going to be huge. I really think season 2 of Guitar Search Saturday will be even more popular than the first one. I hope so. If you do like the videos that I do too, don't forget to share them around your social networks as well. That always helps. I greatly appreciate that. The point of this part of the podcast is just to let you know that things have kind of skewed lately. I've had so many pedals come in that means I have to shoot more videos, and the companies want to see them on my website at some point or on my YouTube channel. So that's what I've been doing, and that kills a whole lot of my time. It's literally one pedal a day. That's kind of, you know, the speed I can knock them out at. Sometimes I can get two done. It just depends if I shoot the intro playing part with guitar and all that at the start or not. And it also depends on how well I'm playing and all of that kind of stuff as well. So I plan on sort of knocking those back to about one a week coming up and focusing more on the podcast, focusing more on the help tutorial series videos, Guitar Search Saturday, and the mailbag. That's going to be kind of like what's going to be happening. And I'm also going to be doing the live streams. I love those live streams. For those who are wondering about the backing tracks, I uploaded a few of those recently. I still have more of them to go. It's just another thing that I need to add to the list. I'm kind of going by popularity right now. So the podcast, Guitar Search Saturday, and the help tutorial videos are generally way more popular than just straight gear demos. Critical and in-depth reviews are extremely popular, so I might keep them going when I have something that I buy or I can borrow and give it an in-depth look and give it a critical review, because people seem to respond well to that as well. You'd be surprised how many people have asked me about the Mustang GT even after seeing my review, and that's great. I really appreciate that. One question I seem to see a lot is, will it be okay for a guy playing at home or a girl playing at home or a kid or whatever, just as a home amp, you know, to stream music, all that kind of stuff? Yes, they'll be fine for that. And that's one thing I needed to sort of stress, was they're not just 100% junk, but in comparison to where they were with the V2 amps that were a great live tool, I really don't see the Mustang GTs being used by too many serious musos. And a lot of people will say, you know, a lot of serious musos won't use Mustang amps anyway, but they do. There's plenty of Mustang owners out there, plenty of people doing serious gigs with them. They're great amps. I'm not saying like the Rolling Stones are going to use them, but people like myself who play at pubs and clubs and all that kind of stuff, maybe do a few festivals, you'll see them floating around, much like PV Bandits. You see them everywhere. I'll be shocked if I see a lot of Mustang GT amps out there used by working musicians like myself or other people. Now, I'm not playing out every night or anything like that, or every other night, but I play at least once a week live, and I gig at least once to twice a month, and that's all I really want to do these days. In terms of the question, yes, they'll be fine if you just want to use them at home, but don't have too high expectations of the tone. If you still own one of the older series of the amps and you're thinking about upgrading, I wouldn't do it unless there's something that the new one does that you're just dying to have. If you're already happy with your sound, don't go changing it. I see a lot of people say also that the price of the V2 amps may actually go up now that they'll be a little bit harder to get and a bit more of a collector's item because they're not available new anymore. And I can kind of see that happening. I think they're a much better sounding amp. That's just my opinion. You may love stuff about the GT, and that's cool too. It's all personal choice, all personal taste. The thing is, don't take it personally. Anything that I say is my own opinion. You know what they say about opinions, right? Everyone's got one, so to speak. That's a nice way of saying it. So yeah, that was just my honest opinion about the amp and my experience using it after, you know, years of using a Mustang 3 and knowing the amps and software back to front. So yeah, keep that in mind. The only person I could see buying a GT amp is someone who's never had a Mustang or modeling amp before, and they just want an amp they can maybe jam around with a few friends, jam at home, all of that kind of stuff. They're a good tool for that, absolutely. I think one thing they should have done though is include the foot switch with the smaller versions of the amp. That's a huge, just absolute downer. Previous generation of amps came with a foot switch. I have no idea why Fender skimped on that. It feels like they may have skimped with the speaker quality as well. If they're the same speaker in both of those amps, there's something seriously wrong with the software on the GT. Everything about the V2 amps just sounds so much more 3D and better to my ear. And that's the In the Blues Tone podcast. My name's Shane. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. It's June 1st, 2017. In 2 days, it's my birthday and I'm turning 38. I can't believe it. 38. It's insane, man. It just, time absolutely flies. One comment that cracked me up on YouTube when I mentioned my age, one guy, I think he was in his 70s, he said something like, "I go to bed, wake up, and it's the next year." That's how much time flies for him. The older you get, the better your reference of time seems to be. and the faster the years go. So that's just, you know, it seems to take forever to get to your 30s. And then after that, you know, someone hits the fast forward button. There's no way, there's just no, you know, doubt about it in my mind. That's just sort of how it feels. Thanks again for watching, folks. And don't forget, if you like Guitar Search Saturday or you want to get a t-shirt with the In the Blues emblem, head over to Teespring. I'll also post the links in the description on the YouTube video and also at inthebluespodcast.com. Thanks again, folks. Catch you soon. See ya.